Hey, Peter.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. When is the last time that we saw each other? Was it randomly at NAMM?
Yeah, yeah. And then before that, I think it was when you played with Intervals, like, ages ago in Melbourne.
Yeah, pretty. That was 2 years ago.
Yeah, man.
Well, how's things?
Yeah, pretty good. I've got to warn you up ahead that I've got bronchitis at the moment, so I'm going to try not to cough constantly during this interview, but we'll see how I do.
Is it going to be a recorded thing or a printed thing?
Yeah, it's recorded. It's for the podcast, so
I'll keep this blessing you.
I'll be editing around coughs and choking sounds and stuff.
Awesome.
Cool. So, dude, I've been listening to the EP, and it sounds, there's something in your music that sounds really triumphant, and the best way I can describe it is it's like standing on a cliff in the wind feeling triumphant about something.
I guess that's kind of, the first time that I realized what that was when I was listening to a demo of Electric Sunrise as I was working on it on a plane to the first NAMM that I ever went to. So I guess where I met you.
Mm.
So I was listening to the demo just to figure out, like, what do I need to add, what do I need to re-record, blah, blah, blah. As I was on the plane that was taking off and I was going to LA for the first time to, like, meet all my idols and all that kind of exciting stuff.
Mm.
And I was like, oh, maybe that's why all my music's so happy, because I'm kind of doing all these childhood dream things right now, and no reason that it wouldn't sound like this.
Yeah.
I think that's probably, and since then I've done like almost 2 years straight of touring and just fun stuff, so I think that's kind of just perpetuated into the music.
Hmm. Well, yeah, you've packed a lot into the last time I saw you play live. Tell me about, you know, the kind of, give me the brief summary of what the last 2 years have been like for you.
Well, I guess I did my first US tour, my first European tour, my second US tour, all in 2016, some with Intervals and some with Animals as Leaders and Intervals. And then 2017, I did my first headlining tour of Europe and my first headlining tour of the US, both with David Maksimovic, who's coming to Australia with me in September.
Mm-hmm.
And then this year, I've done another US tour with Tesseract, then a European headline tour that had a bunch of festivals in it, also with Mestice, who's coming to Australia in September, and then after we do that, I'm going back to Europe with Tesseract between the Baird and me. So I'm pretty much picking off every favourite prog band I have and touring with them, which is, just the best.
Yeah, that's so cool. I mean, I remember back to when Andy Ault first told me about you, and he's like, you know, check out this guy. He hasn't really played live or anything, but, you know, you're going to dig it. And we're trying to get him, you know, get him to play some shows. And now look at you. Jeez. But who is your average... Oh, do you have an average listener? Who's, like, who do you find you're engaging with?
I posted something on Facebook the other day, and I guess Facebook tells you now who you're reaching.
Mm.
Like, it just comes up under the post. And I don't know, do you use Instagram much?
Yeah.
You know the little feature when you take a story, there's this one filter that looks like an old TV show, and it zooms in with like a romantic little piano theme?
Uh-huh.
I was really amused because I looked at this post I'd made, and then I took a video zooming into the line underneath it that says, this post was most liked by males between 25 and 35.
Yeah.
I mean, if I look at my social media demographics, it is, the actual shape of the chart is very phallic. It's sort of like a small bump of teenage guys and then a very long object of sort of young 20s, 30s guys and a smaller one again on the other side.
Hmm.
So yeah, I'd say my average listener is definitely male, relatively young, and probably likes guitar. But it seems to be getting wider and wider the more I tour, especially now that I'm playing with some bands with vocals. I think there's a more even spread.
Yeah. Well, the reason I ask is that I know a lot of women who are into your music, and it seems to me that it doesn't just appeal to that kind of masculine, like, rah, listen to the rhythm guitars going dun 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 dun. You know, there's a lot more going on that's, I don't know, it feels to me like there's a whole personality to it that's a bit outside of what I hear in a lot of, like, heavier prog stuff.
Well, that's good to hear. When I released my first EP, one of the first sort of famous guitarists that I knew listened to it was Ola Englund, who I'm sure you've done a lot of stuff with, or would have at least heard of. And his comment was something like, this dude's cool, you can tell he really likes metal. And he commented this on a song that was pretty much acoustic. And that was really kind of mind-opening for me, because I do listen to a lot of metal, and that's like what I grew up listening to, but then the music I make is obviously a lot lighter. So it's, I guess that could kind of explain that, like, got a background in what you were saying, like the listening to the rhythm guitar sort of aggro music, but for some reason that's not what I'm compelled to write.
So there are four songs here. I guess you could have gone long and written, you know, put like put out 10 songs or something, but this feels like a really focused thing where there's like, you know, each song is different and each song has its place, and you've got a whole bunch of guests on this EP.
I had about 7 songs originally. I didn't quite know whether I wanted to make an EP or an album, but I figured if I was going to make an album, I would want to make it sort of 10 times better than Handmade Cities, or it wouldn't be good enough, in my opinion. So instead I took the 4 songs that I thought were the best, and rather than making it long, I tried to make it like as wide as possible, I guess, so there's just as much detail in all the different parts. And then, with the guests, with Salt and Charcoal, I had this kind of vocal, I guess it's an EDM production thing, having the pitch shifted sort of affected vocals, but that's not really something I know how to do. But Devesh, who plays guitar in Sky Harbor, also does a lot of sort of pop and hip hop production, so I just one night was like, hey man, do you want to put some vocals on this song? And he was like, yeah, and so I sent it to him, and I think he did it just that night at like 3 a.m. or something, and then sent it back. On one of the tracks that has sax and keyboards, both Anomaly and John I've met in the last couple of years and we've become friends. I'm a huge fan of both their playing and also just really like them as people. So when I sort of found space for the instruments, they were kind of a first choice, because to me, I'd rather have a guest that maybe isn't necessarily a big name in the genre, or maybe they are, but is someone that I've hung out with and kind of know well and like as a person. And then on the last track, I was just about to fly off for the tour with Tesseract last April, and I had one guitar solo left to record, and I was pretty much just trying to rip off Tim Miller the whole time. So I emailed him and was like, hey man, I'm trying to be you. Do you think you could just be you instead? And luckily that panned out.
Yeah. I mean, I think it speaks to a certain lack of ego that you're willing to hand over so much, you know, so much runtime to other people.
That's kind of been the goal. Rather than trying to be a hero guitarist, because I think I'm surrounded by guitarists like in person and that I follow on Instagram and stuff, that are just way, way better than I'll ever be, partially because I don't really put the time into that level of technical practice, but also I guess it's just not my passion. But I've always been a big fan of Stephen Wilson and sort of the way he puts together all his music, and I think one thing that he did sort of when he went solo was get the best possible band. So that's been my goal, to surround myself with the best musicians, and so I can do less and just kind of stand there and enjoy what they do.
Especially since you've kind of, you know, really blown up and had success with this, do you find your relationship to the guitar changing?
I'm sorry, what was the first part?
Well, since you've kind of really blown up and found all this success and acclaim, do you find your, and spending all this time on the road, do you find your relationship to the guitar changing?
Definitely. A friend of mine, like, just before I got on the phone, texted me saying, what are you up to today? And I realized I haven't played guitar in 2 weeks, or since I got back from the last tour.
Mm.
So I've just been sorting out logistics for another tour and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, I guess guitar is supposedly what I do, but it kind of actually isn't at all. But as well, I think finding that it's more an instrument that I happen to play, but the goal is just to make music.
Mm. Well, I kind of have this weird relationship with it where it's my favorite thing in the world. I fucking love it. But I don't think of it as I play guitar. I think of it as guitar is the instrument that my music comes out through. And, I don't know. I feel like if I have a richer life by doing a lot of cool stuff and meeting a lot of cool people, that is more beneficial to my music than, you know, learning a new scale or something.
Yeah, I agree 100%. All my sort of developments that I feel good about with music have almost nothing to do with the guitar. Like, they could be to do with harmonic ideas or melodic ideas that could equally play on any other instrument.
Mm.
I'm always working on my phrasing. I think that's the biggest thing for me with guitar is just once I'm writing a melody or a chord or something is trying to express it as best they can on the guitar. But other than that, yeah, I'm not specifically interested in getting really good at the guitar as an abstract sort of device.
Mm. Yeah. We better talk gear while I've got you. So what are you using on the EP?
So I recorded everything with an Axe FX, but Simon, who played bass on it, mixed it, and I sent him all the DIs for the dry guitar sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he used the Line 6 Helix Native software for all the guitar.
Hmm. Cool.
Yeah.
When I saw you in Melbourne, I went to the masterclass before that, which you're also doing on this tour, and I found it interesting that you said at one point that if you could just plug straight into an iPhone and there was your guitar sound, you'd be happy.
Yeah, and I think we're probably moving that way. Like, the Helix Native software, I think, is identical to what runs in the small unit.
Mm.
But it's only a matter of time until iPhones get powerful enough and software gets good enough that could be it.
Yeah.
And then I guess I can just scoop out a chunk of wood from the back of the guitar and glue an iPhone in and just Bluetooth it to front of house or something.
Yeah. It's really funny how, you know, seeing how technology has finally made it easier to tour and cheaper to tour and stuff at a time where, like, you know, sales are being gouged by the fact that CDs aren't really a thing anymore and no one buys music on that scale. It's like, you know, the cost of touring has kind of come down so much thanks to things like the Axe FX that it's like, you know, bands can still get out there even if they're not selling, you know, 100,000 records a year or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess the trade-off as well with everyone being on the internet and streaming is that I think it's getting easier to play in more places. Like, there's no way I'd be able to play anywhere without stuff like Bandcamp and Spotify and Facebook and all that.
Mm. You know, what I've also found is that it's made time less of a factor. Like, it's whenever I talk to, like, you know, kids these days and stuff, they don't just listen to their era. You know, they'll go back and listen to, like, the last friggin' 60 years of recorded music. You know, and it's really kind of opened everything up. You don't get, you know, I'm only a punk kid or I'm only a metalhead as much anymore. You know, it's much more broad, and I think that's, you know, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and it's also perfect for something like this, which is particularly niche, because it kind of can cross over into metal fans or guitar fans or post-rock fans or whatever. which I think probably wouldn't have happened back when you would go into the CD store and go only to the hard rock, heavy metal aisle or whatever.
Man, I remember, like, going into a record store in Wodonga and, like, the only way you would know what was new was you go to the new release section and it's like, oh, there's a new Van Halen record. That had never happened.
I think that was starting to stop as I started buying CDs.
Yeah.
I kind of grew up through dial-up.
Yeah, yeah. I just turned 40 and it's like, oh man, now I've got like 4 decades worth of seeing things really change. Like I was a tiny kid, I was buying records when I was like 8, you know, I was into vinyl and stuff. And then I saw CDs kind of come in and then go out and it's like, wow, I should write a book about this.
Totally.
Anyway, I think that was all the time we had, so I'd better let you go. But yeah, thanks for the chat. It's been really cool, and I can't wait to catch you in Melbourne.
Pleasure. Oh, sweet. All right. See you there.
Yeah, for sure. See ya.
See you, man.
Bye.